This podcast delves into the dark, the depraved, and all things to keep you up at night. Listener discretion is advised. Now, sit back, pull the covers over your head, and allow yourself to be taken on a journey through the abyss.
Your Honor, I'm John Rutten. Thank you for the opportunity to speak during this hearing. There are really no words that can describe the loss of Sherry and the whole of this experience, so it makes no sense to talk very long. It suffices to say that the Rasmussen family, my family, and Stephanie's family have been thrust into a bizarre world of disbelief and indescribable sadness. Sherry Rasmussen had a profound impact on so many people. And I was proud that she agreed to be my wife. It was impossible not to notice Sherry when she entered a room. To me, her physical presence was startling. I can clearly remember the first moment I laid eyes on her. Sherry Rasmussen was a physical presence, and my heart still races when I look at pictures of her. But Sherry was extraordinary. More for who she was than the way she looked. She was a hard worker, a consummate professional, a leader, a diplomat, forgiving, tough, and a kid at heart. Sherry's loss, the way she died, and the trial 25 years after her death has had a profound impact on many, many others. The effects are broad and span a generation, creating pain for those whose lives should have never been touched by this tragic event. Again, words are feeble tools for describing these impacts, but there are so many moments and so very many tears. Your Honor, I'm compelled to end with my feelings toward the Rasmussen family. After meeting Sherry, I could not help but notice the central role she played in this fun-loving and down-to-earth family. Nels and Loretta Rasmussen lost much more than daughter when they lost Sherry. Only they fully appreciate what I'm talking about. The Rasmussens have treated me like a son and a brother, contemplating their profound grief and the fact that Sherry's death occurred because she met and married me brings me to my knees. I do not know, and fear I will ever know, how to cope with this appalling fact. I have resigned myself to praying for some measure of peace and trying to endure the daydreams about a world where Sherry is still with us. And this pointless tragedy never occurred.
Hey there, pod people. Thanks for tuning in to another episode of Through the Abyss podcast. I am your co-host, Mandy.
And I am your co-host, Ben.
And what you just listened to was the start of our Stephanie Lazarus, John Rutten, and Sherry Rasmussen case today. It was John's victim impact statement at Stephanie's trial. I would have shared it on here and played it live, but it makes me cry. So we're just going to go ahead and get it out of the way without me having to watch it over again. So jumping into the crime, John Rutten and Sherry Rasmussen, they met in 1984. They were married in 1985. It's kind of one of those whirlwind love stories, one of those instant attractions, instant connections. They're very much in love. So February 24th, 1986, John leaves for work. Sherry was supposed to go to a class at her work. She was a nurse working in a hospital, and she didn't really feel like it, so she decided to stay home. And John had, he went to work like normal. He had called her around 10 a.m., but she didn't answer, so he just assumed that she had went ahead and gone to work. No big deal. So when he gets home that evening, he notices the garage door was open. There was broken glass everywhere, and Sherry's BMW was gone. Now, when he goes in the house, he finds Sherry dead. She had been severely beaten and had at least one gunshot wound. So naturally, he calls the cops. The police do their little investigation. They found signs of struggle. There was a broken vase that had blood on it. There was a bloody handprint by the alarm panic button that was on the wall. The credenza was knocked over. Now, stacked really neatly on the stairs, there was a VCR and CD player. There was a small, just little one drop of blood smeared on it. They also found a pink and pale quilt that had bullet hole and powder burns, which would signify that somebody had used that as like a silencer. They put the gun muzzle to it, to muffle the sounds of the gun going off, which is why none of the neighbors heard any kind of gunshots. Now, the cops concluded it was a burglary that had gone wrong, perpetuated by two men.
And how did they come to this conclusion? It's just very odd, because clearly that ends up not being what happens. So how do we just say, you know what? This looks like a crime perpetrated by two men.
All right. Well, I guess because they think women aren't capable of committing burglaries, and the house was a mess. So
yeah,
obviously it was a burglary, even though the only thing that was taken was a couple's marriage certificate. So why a burglar would want that, I don't know.
That's definitely what I would go for. I mean, I can see how you could say it's probably two or three people, because you could be like, look, the place is too trash. The scene is too violent. Like, I could see how you come multiple. It's just, okay, look, sexism has been occurring to women for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years. So right. I can't really complain, but it's like two dudes.
Yeah, completely. Nothing further to investigate. And honestly, this is a really, really... This is another case where I don't like the cops, because
I could tell that when you said, I was going to say something, but it's like, I don't want to put the Mandy struggling with cops issue, because you said their little investigation, they conducted their little investigation. That's very condescending, saying that you didn't think it was very well done.
Just wait. Do you understand why I feel this way?
Fair enough.
So... So they find out the only thing missing is the marriage certificate, which is just odd in and of itself. And I don't know if it's because I have common sense, but to me, that would scream it was personal, not a burglary, you know?
Yes. That's what we came for.
Right. That's a very, very personal piece. It just doesn't make sense for a burglar to be like, I need this. And then leave the VCR and CD player sitting on the stairs. Because if you're burglarizing somebody, I should say, you would take it no matter how much of a hurry you'd be in, because it's right there waiting for you. But I
don't know. You know what, though? Like, this guy, like, I don't know where they stored this. Maybe it was displayed in a frame on the wall. I don't know. But, like, for him to come back and, like, be like, you know what? The only thing they took was my marriage license. He must have really loved his wife, right? He's like, how do you notice that's gone?
He may have had it framed. They may have had it framed.
Yeah, maybe it was framed.
I mean, it wasn't their license. It was like their pretty certificate.
Yeah, but I could see instead of taking it, it just trashing being it. Like trashing. Yeah, it's like, but taking it's like, that's like new level cray cray.
Well, just keep that in mind, because I'm going to ask you about it in relation to the psychological aspects of it here in a few minutes.
Fair.
So obviously something like that, wife's dead. Who's the first person they look at? The husband, right? So
yeah.
John had a rock solid alibi. He was at work all day. So he was pretty much immediately ruled out as a suspect. Now, Sherry's parents had told the cops about John's ex harassing Sherry in the months leading up to her death. Of course, cops said they'd take note and follow up, which as you'll see, they did not, or just issued their typical LAPD cover up. But that's another thing. Her autopsy showed that Sherry did fight back, so that makes me happy. But she was severely beaten with the barrel of a gun. She did have a single bite wound to her arm that they swabbed for forensic analysis. And typically, from what I understand, bite marks are generally caused by women, even though Ted Bundy, that was the first case where a bite mark was introduced into court as evidence. So I don't know about that as being a fact, but she did have that bite wound, and her cause of death was 3 gunshots to the chest.
Now, yeah, and Bundy, yeah, he clearly had many, many, many issues that made him do things like bite like all his victims. But if it wasn't for Bundy, mm-hmm. I would say that biting is a very personal thing. Like, I wouldn't say you're just going to go burglarize and bite someone. Like,
right.
I bet if you looked up burglaries, you would not find biting. mentioned in any case.
Well, I mean, you know what? If there was a struggle and these two were fighting, I would bite somebody too. I mean, you know, especially if I were losing.
Yeah.
But I don't know. That's just me. I guess I like to bite. I watch Buffy the Vampire Slayer too much. So the investigation, I wouldn't even call it that. Her BMW was found a week later, but it didn't have any kind of evidence that would lead anybody to anything. 8 months go by. Of course, the case goes cold because they've got this tunnel vision that there's two burglars. That's it. It was just an accidental death. She was just in the wrong place, wrong time. Sherry's parents, who thoroughly believe she was not killed because of a burglary, they are doing the media circuit. They're offering a reward for any kind of info. They're reaching out to the Van Nuys cops, who aren't giving them any help whatsoever. Years go by. Her parents are still looking because, as I said, they don't believe it was a burglary, which I can't really say that I blame them, given the facts that they've had previously. They are continuing to seek help from the cops, who tell them, quote unquote, that they watch too much TV and they need to just let them do their jobs. I might have punched the cop if somebody had told me that and probably ended up in jail, but that's, again, just me. Now, DNA, this is when that we're in the 90s now. So DNA has obviously gained popularity. The only problem is that in order to convict somebody or to arrest somebody, they have to have the suspect's DNA on file to match whatever was swabbed from the bite mark, which there is nothing on file. So really, even though her family offered to pay for the testing of the DNA, there's nothing they could do because there's, you know, no corresponding evidence to match it. Now, in 2004, I guess the LAPD started looking into some of their cold cases, and a criminalist was assigned to analyze the case. And when she went back to go over the evidence, the forensic evidence, all of the evidence had been missing since 1993, and it was checked out by some other detective. Now, the criminalist kept searching, and she eventually found in the back of some refrigerator in the very back of an office that swab from the bite mark on Sherry's arm. And she ran the sample through CODIS. There weren't any hits, but they did discover that the DNA was from a woman, not a man. So that's a clue leading in the right direction. And she also had...
Go ahead. You would think police officers would all be on CODIS. Like, that would be part of the hiring, to be all like fingerprints, everything.
I don't know if it, I mean, it may be now, but back in the 90s, and, well, because she started, she was on the force in the 80s, Stephanie was. So obviously it wouldn't have been then and probably not the 90s, but I mean, I don't know. Yeah. I guess technically that would be against their civil liberties, their civil rights, yeah, but I'm not sure. Because I mean, like for us, the only thing I had to do was pass a background check and a drug test. Like, I didn't have to get fingerprinted or, you know, have my DNA put on file, but I'm, you know, also not a cop. But I don't know if that's something that they're...
Well, we were at the airport, we got fingerprinted.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know. And, like, when I coached, I had to be fingerprinted.
Well, that was for the airport. That was for the FAA, so that was a federal thing.
Okay.
And the feds, I guess, can do whatever the hell they want.
Yeah, and schools are just very strict, but I mean for good reason, right?
Yeah. Well, the school thing, definitely. I don't know, that's something I should check that out and find out if that's an actual thing. It'd be a good idea, quite frankly. I think every one of us should be fingerprinted and have our DNA on file, but
that's, yeah, unfortunately people would throw a fit saying that civil rights violated, etc. But I mean, it would definitely, it would definitely be a reasonable thing, right?
Yeah, I mean, I can kind of understand why some people would not want that because, you know, science isn't always correct. There are mistakes that can be made, like contamination, things like that. So, say your DNA accidentally gets mixed up into a murder case and you're convicted of a murder based on false DNA or contaminated DNA. So I can understand both sides of it. Okay, so the criminologist found a report of a female who was harassing Sherry before the murder. And she had asked a detective who had previously worked on the case if they had investigated her. And his response was something like, oh, you mean the LAPD detective? Yeah, she's not a part of this. So, yeah, she was completely overlooked. That screams cover up to me. But again, that's just my opinion. He did insist that it was a botched robbery committed by a man and a woman. So he changed his mind only to the fact that it wasn't two men. It was just a man and a woman. No help whatsoever.
No.
And we wonder why the LAPD has such a wonderful reputation. Now, in 2009, detectives Jim Nuttall and Pete Barba were assigned the cold case. And they came across the same reports as the criminalists did of Stephanie Lazarus, who was the LAPD detective who had been mentioned in the reports. They had to investigate her in a private manner. They had to do it outside normal business hours because she was very distinguished in the department. She was kind of high up. She was, I think, one of the lead detectives on art theft, which is the only, like, one of the only departments who actually handled art theft, I think, in the country, but I'm not sure about that. But she was pretty high up and well respected. They didn't even use her name in the reports. They called her number five. Now, the DNA sample that they had from the swab from the bite mark, they wanted to test it against Stephanie's. But of course, they're not going to ask her for her DNA outright because that would immediately throw her into suspicion and cause a lot of problems. So what they did was they tailed her for a couple of days. And when she was out at lunch at some, I don't know, some restaurant, whatever, she threw away her cup that she'd been drinking out of. So they collected her cup, got the DNA off of her cup, and it was a perfect match to what was swabbed from Sherry's bite mark. So they had their girl. This is the chick who killed Sherry Rasmussen. Okay. But wasn't over just yet. So they had to, of course, bring her in and everything. They had also found out that the murder weapon was a .38 caliber, which was the same off-duty weapon that that Stephanie had owned. Stephanie had conveniently reported it stolen 13 days after Sherry's murder. My opinion is she chucked it in the ocean, so it would never, ever be found again. Now, some background on Stephanie. Stephanie and John were friends in college. You know, they were common interests were sports, that type of thing, because they were both athletes. They dated very, very casually off and on, and John maintains that they were really nothing more than friends with benefits. So, you know, typical college guy, don't want to be tied down. Stephanie, however, completely in love with him, even after she got married in, I think, 93 to her husband. Now, the evidence that the cops had retrieved from her house was a journal in which she wrote of her love for John, how depressed she was at his engagement, and how she couldn't understand why he didn't feel the same way about her. So this chick is off the rails as far as being obsessed with him, really.
Yes.
I mean, she's very manipulative. And I dug up a little bit about her background as a kid. I mean, it was, you know, fairly normal. She didn't have, like, any abuse. You know, her dad was kind of, well, he was an athlete, so he was very, you know, one of those dads that pushed their kids into excelling and doing really well at sports and that type of thing. But her and her mom, well, he and her mom had gotten divorced, and she didn't really have anything to do with her dad pretty much growing up. So, like half the country, you know, but most of us don't turn into obsessive stalkers because of it. So, after John and Sherry were married, Stephanie would pop up just randomly. And one day she, you know, came by John's house, brought her skis because she wanted John to wax them. This was like out of the blue. And John was kind of hesitant at first, but she eventually, you know, convinced him to do it. And she had come back a couple of days later to pick him up. Now she was in full dress uniform, sidearm and everything, after John had left for work. So it was just her and Sherry conversing whatsoever. And of course, it made Sherry uncomfortable. It would me too. You know, I mean, that kind of feels like intimidation. You know, you're showing up in your uniform with your sidearm at the ready, getting something back that your husband has, you know, just did a favor for you. It's just, it's really weird. But she had, I guess Sherry was not stupid. You know, she knew what was going on. But she was like, she pretty much told her that she needed to stop coming by and basically just to leave him alone. Stephanie, being the obsessed love freak that she is, didn't take this very well. So I'm not sure how long after the ski wax incident happened, but I know she showed up at Sherry's office at the hospital and they had a confrontation, and Stephanie flat out told her that things were not over between her and John, and that, quote unquote, if I can't have John, no one else will. Now, as somebody who is getting their doctorate in psychology, what can you tell me about
currently
this
masters
guy?
Currently masters trying to transition to the doctorate. The thing is, the DSM-5, the DSM in general, right? They're on the fifth. Mm-hmm. It's a living, breathing text that constantly is changing and growing and adapting. There's always updates being made, and there's always talk of updates occurring. And strangely enough, one of the updates that they're thinking about making is called obsessive love disorder, right? Which would fall into the obsession and compulsion realm of the DSM-5, which would make sense. Obsessive love compulsive behaviors may go hand in hand with erotomania, a mental health condition in which you experience delusional beliefs of being loved by another person. Now, in most cases, that is...
You said erotomania. Is it like some form of erotica?
Yeah. Sorry, I probably pronounced it wrong. Is erotomania.
Like okay.
Yeah, right. And obviously, that would be the stem of where Eros comes from too, meaning love, right?
Gotcha.
So, it's in most cases, it's going to be someone that's of a higher economic status or a higher status or someone famous. However, when Stephanie meets John in college, right? He might've been someone she highly respected, right? Obviously she ends up having prestige in her own right in her career.
He was older too.
And he was older, right? Someone that she kind of fixated on.
Mm-hmm.
Stalking also is its own thing, right? So all of those would go hand in hand. Comorbidity meaning disorders that work together. Obsession, compulsion, stalking, and this erotomania definitely would be things that could easily tie together. And it seems like for some reason she just latched onto this guy and thought the relationship was more than it was, right?
Would stalking be considered a power thing or just some sort of mental delusion?
I mean, it really depends, right? I would say like stalking, if you're like a Ted Bundy and mm-hmm. you're looking to dominate and control and murder people, it would be a power thing. I would say in the case of Stephanie, being that she considered that their relationship was more important than it was, and that he was still in love with her and that they were in love and that there was this thing, she probably just thought that it was normal, natural, going to check out my boo type stuff, right?
So she kind of had, what is it, grandiose delusions? Is that what you would call it?
I mean, you could say that, because she definitely thought she was more prevalent in this person's life than she mm-hmm. was, right? So she's definitely inflating her role in his life, which I think for him, her role in his life would be more of a please go away and leave us alone type of role.
So. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I think he kind of egged her on a little bit too. Because, I mean, no offense to guys, but you guys do like attention.
Yeah.
No matter where it comes from. It's just a man thing. But yeah. I know that even after his wife died, she snuck her way back in. And I think they hooked up once or twice, you know, after his wife died. So
which is really kind of crazy, because you would think that he would be smart enough to figure out, with the marriage certificate disappearing and the fact that this lady's popped up several times, that like she's at least a suspect. Well, we probably should leave her alone.
He didn't know about Sherry's stalking stuff. She only told her parents, and she said she didn't want John to know that she would handle it. So he didn't actually know about those incidents. So,
okay.
But I mean, I don't know. I mean, I find it hard to believe that there weren't signs that he could recognize from somebody who so clearly got him on the brain 24/7.
Yes, I mean, she had to have been odd in college, right? This had to have been an ongoing strange relationship.
Yeah, and I don't, because I mean, there's nothing as far as college-wise, her acting like this. But, it, you know, I guess dating somebody and then marrying somebody is completely different. If she could, I don't know, maybe explain away in her head, oh, they're just dating, you know, and I'm dating this other guy.
Right. And I was going to say, it is possible too that, like, from the college years on, she might have experienced several or one major or a few really bad relationships. And for some reason, she might have idealized the relationship with John. And after several failed attempts that could have been traumatic to her, she might have said, wait, this is the person I was supposed to be with. This is the person I love. And fixated at that point. Maybe it wasn't an initial college fixation, but more of a, this was the best relationship I ever had now that I'm an adult.
Clearly, though, she seems, I don't know. I mean, this happened, what did I say, 1985, 86? So 86 to 2009. She keeps advancing in her career. She's making positive steps forward. I mean, it doesn't seem like she's bothered about the fact that she just killed John's wife. And, you know, they're still not together because she's married and has an adopted daughter. And John, a few years later, got, you know, remarried and everything. So, I mean, they're still not together. So, I know I use the term, I know I use sociopath all the time, but that kind of screams sociopath to me a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, she wasn't going to get what she wanted from it, but I mean, people that have disorders like that aren't thinking logically either. So, I mean, she's kind of just, that's where the obsessive part of it comes in, right? It's a compulsion. It's not a controllable thing.
So, I mean, because she, I wonder if she actually had this premeditated or if it was something, because I don't think she necessarily meant to kill her. I think it was more of they got into a fight and rage kind of just took over. I don't want to call it a crime of passion, but I think she just let rage, you know, come over her and she took care of a situation.
Yeah, I'm 100% with you because my first thoughts on it were that she's very, like you said, very career centric. She wants to put full focus on the career. Having this person that she in her mind has built up as her love, even though it's not true, gives her the ability to have career plus the love interest, even though there doesn't have to be an interaction or any work in that love. She's able to say, this is the person I'm with. This is the person I love, at least in her own mind. And have her career. So my guess is that had Sherry never said, don't come back here, leave us alone, this would have lasted forever and it wouldn't have caused too much harm other than inconvenience and distress on Sherry's part, right? Where this lady's kind of a bother.
Something else. I mean, I don't want anybody to think that I am siding with Stephanie Lazarus at all or feeling sorry for her whatsoever, because I don't, because if you've never seen this interrogation video of her, she is, I don't want to say batshit crazy, because I think she's completely aware of what she's doing. She's very manipulative and not a very good liar. I've, you know, in the last few years, I've kind of been studying body language and how to tell when people lie to you and things like that. And she has something else. I'm getting ready to play some clips of that in just a second. But I want to go back to the detectives. Now, on June 5th, 2009, Detectives Nuttall and Barbara, they called Stephanie to the police headquarters saying that a suspect who was in custody wanted to talk about some stolen art, which, again, was what she was doing at the time. And they brought her to this place, and it's actually very smart. The place that they had to bring her, you weren't allowed to have weapons, even if you were a cop inside. You had to check your weapons. So she was completely unarmed, which is, you know, smart on their part, just in case she lost her mind and decided to start shooting up the place. So once they get her into the interview room, they told her that they'd brought her there because her name had come up in reports on a murder of Sherry, and they wanted to see if she could tie up some loose ends. Of course, you know, playing the same cop tricks that they always play with interviews slash interrogations, you know, building that rapport, blah, blah, blah. So I'm going to play some clips and then we'll talk about it.
You know what, before you play it though, I do want to say, like, as opposed to the Christian Bahena Rivera interview interrogation that we heard, at least they really do seem to be gathering information. They're not like, we know you did this, blah, 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 blah. You know what I mean? It's a much better interrogation.
It is, but they're still employing those same tricks because they're catering their questions around getting her to admit to things that they already know the answers of.
Yeah.
Roughly, how long would you say you guys dated?
Oh, jeez. I couldn't even say. I mean, I started school there in 78. Mm-hmm. I started UCLA in 1978. Mm-hmm. I graduated in 82. I don't even remember what year he graduated, if it was a year or two before me.
Okay.
I think he was a little bit older than I was. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, I can't remember if he was born, let's say I'm born in 1960. I don't know if he was born in 58 or 59. I mean, I knew his parents, I knew his sister. His brother went to Northridge. Mm-hmm. You know, sister spent the night at my house before. Obviously, I spent the night at his house before. He probably spent the night at my house before. You know,
correct me if I'm wrong, because from what you're telling me, is you guys dated while you were in college together, right?
Yeah, and probably after college. I'm trying to think when I met my husband. I met my husband.
Okay. They asked her how long she dated John. The roundabout answer she gave, with all the extraneous information that was so unnecessary, is a form of deception. And by the way, I just also want to point out the fact that she has intense eyes just on a normal basis. Like, she's one of those creepy-eyed type people. So don't let that throw you in any way, shape, or form. But she does this. The interrogation itself is like an hour and 12 minutes long. And a lot of the times, to most of the questions that they ask her, this is the type of answer that she's giving. And from what I've learned over the years, it's just a matter of distracting and, you know, trying to lead away from the fact that she's probably sitting there thinking, oh shit, I'm kind of busted now.
Yeah, you know what, too? Like, it feels like she's trying to, like, almost downplay the extent of time that she says, either downplay or hype up the amount of time she's saying they dated. Because if you look at, like, the time period of what she's saying, most of college and then a little after college, like, it's almost like they dated for, like, 6 years. Like, they practically were engaged. I mean, come on.
Right. And, I mean, a little bit later, she also tries to downplay her actual... the way she felt about the guy. Like, oh yeah, he was a good buddy. We dated off and on, you know, he dated girls, I dated guys. Like, it was no big deal, where obviously it really was. Let's listen to another clip.
I do want to say about that clip too, though. I would have sworn, I would have bet my life that she said that she graduated in 1992. It's like, man, she went to school for 14 years. Then I figured out, like, the crimes were in the 80s. So she had to have said 82. But it sounded a whole lot like 92.
No, it was in the 80s. Yeah, that would have been a really, really long time to be going to school.
You're saying that...
it's 2009 now.
Had you ever met his wife?
I may have.
Do you remember her name or anything? Or
fake recall right there.
Or what she did for a living, or where she worked, or anything about her?
Well, I think I think she was a nurse. And I can't remember how he said he met her. It's been so long ago.
Well, let me ask you, did you go to their wedding?
It's been so long ago. She can't remember anything. She's throwing time in there a lot. And, there have been a lot of studies done as far as, you know, which way a person looks, like to the left or to the right or up or down or whatever, that will signify whether the line, not necessarily true, but one of the things, and I actually should have brought it on here, there was a genuine picture of her in true recollection where she's, you know, because most people when they're reflecting on something, they're going to squint their eyes or kind of close them because they're trying to recall those facts or those memories. There was one instance in which she actually did that. So there is a baseline for the shit that I'm saying right now. I'm not just like guessing. And for those who are just listening to this podcast, I am working on our YouTube channel, so I will put this up. You can actually go on YouTube and see this interrogation video. I would suggest watching it because it is fascinating just to see the way she dodges things and just the way her facial expressions are. And she has some crazy ass facial expressions during this whole interrogation. There are even people on YouTube who have made remix clips of just her facial expressions put to different songs. It's funny, but it's not, but it is funny.
Now they've determined definitely, sorry, it's off topic of what you're mm-hmm. discussing, but like that John has nothing to do with this, right?
Correct. Yeah. He actually is an innocent bystander. He legitimately did care and very much love his wife. And
I mean, it sounds like it from all accounts. It just, and you know, it, like I said, this obsessive love disorder is about a made up thing in your own mind, but it's just really hard to believe that they don't have an ongoing affair occurring throughout this, watching this interview, because she's so dodgy that it's almost like she's just trying to hide the fact that like, we still see each other. I still know everything that's going on in his life. You know what I mean? Like, it seems like they might have had something happening.
Well, I know he did at the very beginning of their marriage, they had an affair. They had like a one-nighter because she was all upset and called him over, and this is going to be like their breakup, goodbye, final, whatever. But from everything else I've read, he was pretty faithful, you know, Sherry. I mean, well, hell, they weren't married that long because she killed her, you know, a year after they were married. So it really wasn't even that much of time limit, but or time frame. But I don't think he didn't feel for her the way she felt for him. That's guaranteed. I mean, some of his friends had come forward from college, and you know, this is horrible to say, stating that John had said that, you know, she had a great body, but her face wasn't that great, you know, things like that. So something you wouldn't typically say about somebody you were in love with, I would imagine.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think he's in love with her. I don't know.
Why are you laughing?
I find it hard to believe that affair didn't continue. That just, well, you said they weren't married long either, though. So even if they definitely had an affair in the beginning, this is only within a year later, right, that she's deceased.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
You know, and I don't know. I mean, I think he actually found somebody that he really loved and was just like, yeah, whatever, you know. We're friends with benefits and the benefits part's over, you know. End of discussion. I really don't think he even thought about it. I mean, guys don't sit and ponder stuff like this typically, I don't think.
No, but, or he knew that she was batshit, right? So, I mean, there's also we've all definitely dated people that were batshit, where like, the sooner they get out of my life, the better. And so he found someone more stable and was like ready to be done with that. But she wasn't ready to be done with that. So that's
clearly. That is an understatement on that right there.
I heard. I mean, I don't even remember what year it was.
And you think you said his wife was a nurse. Do you have any idea where she was working at the time, or did he ever mention that to you? Was it a hospital or a doctor's office?
I'm sure he must have mentioned it. Now that you're bringing that up, I think she worked at a hospital somewhere. And yeah, I may have met her at a hospital. I may have talked to her once or twice.
At a hospital?
Or more. You know,
but being that you're kind of used to see John, you know, was it everything okay between you guys? I mean, there was never anything uncomfortable or anything between you and her?
You know, I don't know. I mean, it's been so many years. I mean, uncomfortable. I mean, I can't even remember if we had a conversation. I mean, we may have. I may have seen her at his apartment. You know, geez, how many years ago is that? I don't even know what year she, you know, got killed.
Where was his apartment?
On Roscoe.
Okay.
Yeah, Roscoe and east or west of DeSoto, either east or west of DeSoto.
She can't even remember what year it is. She can't remember anything, but she sure shit knows the name of the street he used to live on way back when.
Right. And then I think she honestly is smart enough to realize, oh, I shouldn't have said that. So she's like, now I'm confused about whether it was east or west of DeSoto.
Right.
Which doesn't matter at all.
Yeah. I mean, there are so many facial, just the facial expression she makes is just like, her brain's trying to buy her mouth time to come up with a good answer to make her not sound like she's incriminating herself. Yes. Which,
well, and time blurs as you get older, for sure.
That's true.
But if you ask me, like, anyone that I remember ever even knowing who they are, whether or not we've had a discussion in the past, I would either be like, no, I don't think I've ever talked to her or him, or yeah, I think we've spoken before. You know, it wouldn't be like, oh, I don't even know. It's been a million years ago. I don't even know. It's like, look, if you talk to the dude's wife or not, I'd be like, yeah, okay, we've spoken, right? Like, people wouldn't forget that.
No, that and the fact that she's very adamant about, you know, because when they were in college, they all lived on the same floor, like her and John and their mutual friends. And she's mentioned several times during this interview that she keeps in touch with them and things of that nature. So as much as she seems to like John, you're going to sit there and tell me that she would not remember meeting and speaking to his wife, the love of her life, who's been taken away from her by this other woman she can't recall talking to ever. Come on.
Right. And I think that in all honesty, she thinks that saying she can't remember makes it so like these people are not that significant to me, but she'd look a whole lot saner and a whole lot less guilty had they not already had the DNA. If she was just like, oh yeah, we've spoken before for sure. Yeah, I've met her.
Yeah, I mean, nice just lady. Because,
you know, like,
well, the final clip that I'm getting ready to show, well, actually I have two more, but the final one, she makes a statement that's just like, you know, really she could have used in her favor at the beginning of this, but we'll get to that in a minute. She's just, this chick is just, you know, for a cop, you'd think she'd be a little bit smarter with the way she's handling this interrogation.
It's not ringing a bell. And there was lots, I mean, you know, there's just, there was other people that knew other people, you know, that were friends of everybody's, you know, I mean, I don't know what else to tell you.
Well, one of the concerns I had is looking at some of the notes is some of Sherry's friends said that you and her were having a problem because of the John situation.
Look at that face.
Well, number one, I don't know who her friends are. Because again, I don't recall if he did tell me where he met her. I don't know even who these friends are. A problem, like I said, if I spoke to her, I mean, I'll go on as far and as a limb, and I don't even want to say I spoke to her five times, because that's probably not even true. I can't even remember. Again, did I meet him at her place when he lived on Roscoe for, I think, quite a while, but I couldn't tell you how long he lived on Roscoe. And the only reason I remember the place now is because it's like a huge dope place now, where they, you know, it may have been back then, but, you know, maybe we didn't know back then. I could have met her there. I could have, you know. You know, I don't even know that I met any of their friends. I can't say that. I don't know that that's a true statement.
Well, that's what I'm reading, is that you guys have problems with each other and words are being exchanged, and it's all relating to John.
You know what? I can't say.
You can't say?
No, that doesn't even ring a bell. So, I mean,
it seemed like, yeah, you would recall something if Somebody's going off on you, right?
I would think.
Yeah, I mean, I don't recall if we had an issue going on about John or not. Look, you either are like, that's stupid, that never happened, or, yeah, I mean, we had a few words, but I didn't kill this woman, right? Like, right. You know, like...
And the fact that Sherry's friends remember this chick.
Yeah.
You know, and not more than one person.
Right, right. She probably has met them because she's popping up everywhere, but yeah. She's like, I don't think I've even met her friend. Like, number one, you don't even know if you met her. So, of course, you don't know if you met her friends. But number two, it doesn't fucking matter if you met them or not. Because if I said, hey, Mandy, this chick's stalking me and you never met the chick, you still have that information.
Yeah, it's not something I would forget. I don't care how many years down the road. If you're coming to somebody's office and having a pretty heated confrontation with one of my friends, I'm going to remember without a doubt that, yeah, she's...
Batshit.
Batshit crazy is the best way to describe it. But I mean, it's... And it's ridiculous because she's a fucking cop. She should know how to counteract this shit. That's what kills
me. Yeah, and you know, like I said, like, I think in her mind, just playing this time has passed and I don't remember shit card is the way to go. And it was a really bad idea. I mean, I don't think she like expected to be just yanked into an interrogation, so she probably was unprepared. But the right thing would just be like, look, I loved John and I wasn't happy they got married. We had some words. You know, it is what it is. I can't go back on that, but I'm sad that the lady's dead and, you know, don't know what happened there. But, you know, yeah, I had some issues.
Yeah. Well, and this is what I don't understand with this whole bullshit interrogation thing that the cops pull all the time. They've got her DNA matched perfectly to the bite mark, so they know she did it. Why not just bring her in and be like, look, I don't know what happened between you and Sherry, but you left a fucking bite mark on her arm. The DNA matches you guys, you know, perfectly. Tell us about it. What the fuck happened? And then she could lawyer up right then and there and just take it to trial, or she could give him a confession. I don't understand why they think they have to.
I didn't know where you were going with that at first, because I was going to say, obviously, like we learned last week, that confessions are huge, but you could definitely elicit the confession by just putting your cards on the table. I don't know why you wouldn't just say, we already have DNA link. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, because that's a pretty, not only that, they could, I mean, if they wanted to, they could also take her teeth impressions and match them up if they needed even more proof. So,
yeah, you know what? The only thing I could say is from this standpoint, if you do a normal interrogation without putting your cards on the table and she confesses, you now have a confession and DNA evidence. If you put the DNA evidence out there and then she confesses, her lawyers could wheedle it into like, they faked this DNA and caused a false confession from my client. Right. But if they're totally two separate things, you can't go that route. So it does give more strength to a confession.
I suppose. I mean, you could argue it really both ways. You know, you're trying to trick her into making a false statement, which on this case, it wouldn't be false because they've got the evidence against her.
Yeah.
Or the way you saw it just now, to where they laid their cards out and, you know, they scared her into confessing. But my guess is if they had just presented the DNA evidence right away, she would have lawyered up immediately. If she was smart, that's what she would have done.
Right. I mean, but this lady's number one, she's got issues. And number two, she's a cop and she's very smart. Look, if they had thrown their cards on the table, thrown the cards down and said, hey, look, we got this DNA evidence, she would have been like, no, you don't. You know, like, it wouldn't have changed a damn thing.
And that's the thing, because, I mean, you can tell just by the looks on her face that she's thinking, oh, shit, I'm totally fucked. How am I going to get myself out of this?
Yeah. So
that kind of makes me wonder, because you know she had to catch on, like, within the first 5 or 10 minutes of them bringing up John. Because why would you bring up something 30 years later if you weren't being, you know, accused of something? That just doesn't make any sense.
Right. And we just wanted to bring you in to tie up a few loose ends.
Right. Like, yeah. No.
Everyone in the world's calling bullshit on that. It's like, fuck, I'm the suspect.
So this makes me think maybe there's a little bit of arrogance to her that she thinks she can maybe talk her way out of any kind of accusations, maybe by playing dumb. Well, by using the Dalton Jack thing of, I don't recall.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, clearly that's a tactic that's still being used today, right?
Definitely. So. Okay, the last clip.
Looking at the case, and, you know, we had read the notes as far as from Sherry's friend saying, you guys had problems or words, and they got heated. You know, and the reason we're asking you is they had mentioned that an incident at her work had occurred, and they've also told us that an incident at her house occurred.
You know what?
And this is at her house during the period of time that they're married.
That's just not sounding familiar at all. Mm-hmm. I mean, again, if someone says that I was at her house and I had an incident with her, was John there? Did John say this happened? Because, and other people were there? I don't recall. Mm-hmm. I mean, it just doesn't sound, you know, familiar.
And this is an incident where you showed up. You weren't supposed to show up. And things got heated.
At his house? That that just doesn't sound familiar. I mean,
nothing.
No. It's not sounding familiar.
So
not at all.
Now you're saying not familiar because it's just, you remember, or it's
You know what? I'd have to say I don't remember, because I don't remember. That doesn't sound familiar.
Would you remember something like that in your life?
I would think,
sort of drama involving, you know, the other woman type of thing.
Did you ever fight with her?
You mean like we fought?
Yeah. Did you ever duke it out with her?
No, I don't think so. I mean,
you'd remember that, right? That would be pretty.
Yeah, I would think so.
Specific.
Like I said, I mean, dramatic. Obviously, it just doesn't sound familiar. I mean, what are they saying? So I fought with her. So now, I mean, I'm getting the leap. Excuse me, I haven't eaten. They're saying, okay, I fought with her, so I must have killed her. I mean, come on. I mean, that's, you know, I don't even know who these people are. I can't.
And the truth comes out.
Yeah, like, number one, who the fuck cares who these people are? She keeps saying that shit. But number two, man, like, what the hell, like, kind of person? Like, it's like, that doesn't sound familiar. What kind of phrasing is that on that? It's like, hey, did you get an altercation with this woman? That doesn't sound familiar. Hey, did you ever fist fight this woman? That doesn't sound familiar. It's like, did you murder? Doesn't sound familiar. Like, anyone in their right mind would be like, no, motherfucker, I didn't do it.
Yeah, I mean, if you were innocent, I think you would be getting really pissed off at this point.
Yeah. But I mean, innocent or guilty, if you're denying it, you'd say no. You wouldn't say that doesn't sound familiar. That's just weird.
Yeah. But I just like the fact that she inadvertently threw in, I fought with her, so I must have killed her. You know, it's.
Yeah. She said, I get the jump. I get where you're going with this.
Yeah.
She caught on. Like, she didn't catch on when she, like you said, when she walked in the fucking room.
Right.
Like,
exactly.
Like, come on. You caught on an hour ago.
Yeah.
You just finally are at your breaking point because you're tired of us beating on you.
Yeah, pretty much. And there's only like another 10 minutes left of this interrogation. And, you know, she's basically saying, well, are you accusing me of this? And they're like, would you provide a DNA sample? Even though they don't need one. She's like, maybe.
Maybe.
Then
maybe like, the equivalent of I'm not familiar with that. You know, it's like everything for her is just this dicey, iffy shit.
Well, and she's like, well, you guys are, and the detective's like, we're not trying to make you uncomfortable. She's like, well, you guys are making me uncomfortable, and I'm thinking I should probably talk to somebody. And then they tell her, like, well, you know, you're not under arrest, you're free to go. And then she gets up and leaves. And then a couple minutes later, cops are waiting outside to arrest her because, you know, they already had her DNA.
Well, and she's an idiot anyways, because I think maybe I should talk to somebody. Yeah, you should have your lawyer with you when you fucking walked in. You're a fucking cop. You should know better.
Well, they brought her in under false pretenses. So she was under the assumption she was coming in there to interview somebody who about art theft. So
we just want to ask you a few questions about the Sherry thing, you know,
she got there.
Just to tie up. Okay, so she had
no
idea.
They totally tricked her into coming in.
Is that even legal?
apparently, I guess they can do whatever the hell they want to in interrogation. So
that's a good question for Martina. I might text her on that. Just like, doesn't sound legal.
Well, I know her lawyer tried to get the whole trial thrown out, but it didn't work. So they arrested her. She wouldn't give the DNA, which, you know, like I said, she didn't need to because they already had it. Now, her trial actually began in 2012, and she was convicted of first-degree murder. She was sentenced to 27 years to life in prison. She's going to be eligible for parole in 2034. This is what really pisses me off, though. The LAPD allowed her to fucking retire. So if she ever out, she's going to be getting a goddamn pension.
That's weird.
That's
I do want to throw out for the DNA thing too, for the people that are not like us who don't watch mass amounts of true crime. Although they, if they're listening to us, they probably do. But DNA wise, like, she refused to give it to them. However, you don't personally own your DNA once you dispose of it in public property. Exactly. That's why they're allowed to take it from the trash. As soon as she throws that cup in the trash, the police can take it and do whatever they want with it. So
exactly.
If she kept it in her hand forever, that's her DNA. But once she disposes of it, that's public domain.
Public property, baby. Yeah. So that was, I mean, pretty brilliant on their part to go that route instead of.
And they've done that multiple cases. Oh, I've heard multiple times from cigarette butts. Cigarette butts catch like so many criminals. Because there's an excessive amount of criminals that smoke. Sorry, people, smokers who are not criminals. Kills. It kills, and you're throwing your DNA right on the ground for the popo.
Exactly. That's a very good anti-smoking campaign right there.
Yes.
If you don't want to kill your lungs, then at least just be aware, if you're a criminal, smoking will get you caught.
If you don't want to kill your lungs, but do want to kill your wife, don't smoke.
Oh my God.
Too far.
Last thing I want to point out was no one was ever held responsible or prosecuted for the mistakes made in the original investigation. And I'm sorry, but that screams cover up to me. Especially given,
I mean, what kind of prosecution could you do to like, who could they have gone after for the original investigation?
The original detectives, I would assume, for possibly covering up, you know, and protecting Stephanie, because you know that's what they're doing.
Well, yeah,
it was one of their own, so they're not gonna throw her under the bus, even though she fucking killed somebody, you know. Who knows? I mean, and actually, and the weird thing was is that it was her team that was actually doing the investigation. It wasn't her specifically, but it was her department. If that tells you anything.
Yeah, it tells me that they were digging and it figured out the answer. And then they're like, we don't like this answer. Move on.
Exactly. Yeah. They're just like, we're going to stick with the two men burglarized. Sherry was there, got caught up in the middle of it. Case closed.
Yeah. And it also explains where that two men ridiculousness I was talking about earlier comes from. Cause it's like, you can't just like jump to that random ass conclusion. It's like, no, we want the world to believe this random ass conclusion because we know what really happened.
Yeah, exactly. So, and, oh, that's why that just makes me so angry. And the LAPD doesn't have the best reputation anyway. So this certainly did not help it at all. But fortunately, the two detectives that did catch it, they seem to be on the ball and, you know, not putting up with shit. And they actually work in the same building that Stephanie does too. So, or did, I should say.
Yeah.
But yeah.
When like I said, I actually thought that the interrogation was well done. But then I was thinking about it. It's like, it's only well done because number one, she's got clout. She's a police officer and she's not an illegal immigrant. Like the last one we heard, right? They just beat the hell out of Rivera because they could get away with it. It's actually just kind of more depressing, right? Like,
yeah. I mean, I think, and basically both of them use the same techniques for the most part from what I was watching, but I don't know if it's just because I can't stand this woman that it didn't bother me the way they were doing it. Whereas with Rivera, I, you know, my heart went out to him because it was just, you could just see what they were doing. The poor kid was delirious and, you know, they really took advantage of him. Her, they did not. They just, you know, they should have just fucking arrested her as it was, been like, look, sorry, but we got you, and you can confess now and get a lawyer. We'll deal with it, you know. But I don't know. I don't know. Police interrogations and everything, but Yeah, we definitely need to ask Martina about that because it was in California, so she should have a pretty good jump on that. And we
yeah, for sure. And it's really interesting because it seems like you would have to say, hey, we're going to interrogate you about this crime. Like, would you come down willingly or do we need to take you in? It's like sort of like trick her into going there. It does seem wrong.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure they had their reasons for doing it. And I don't know. I'm almost kind of would like to reach out to them, see if they would actually answer some of those questions. I mean, I don't know if they're still in the force or not, but I mean, it wasn't long ago. What, 12 years ago, 13 years ago, I guess. Well, I guess, well, they may be retired. Who knows? I don't know. But it was an interesting case, and she's always fascinated me to the extent of just her body language is so all over the place and just really gave her away, in my opinion. That, and she's just absolutely.
Yeah, you know what gave it away for me, and it's part of the body language, but when she would get asked the question, she would go. It's like every question. Yeah, like she had to blow out this stress ball. And
that's,
it's like,
well, that's exactly what it. Yeah, that's what it is.
Yeah. And it's like, I get that no matter who's interrogated, whether you're innocent or not, it's going to be stressful as hell. Mm-hmm. But like if every question's like, and it's like her pausing and then like, that doesn't sound familiar. It's like anyone else would be like, no. That didn't fucking happen. No, that right, didn't happen. Right. And then after like a bunch of them, you might be stressed and be like, but like every question doesn't sound familiar. No.
Yeah, and I just don't know why she didn't invoke her right to fifth? Silence.
Yeah. You think she would have pleaded the fifth and just, yeah.
Like,
or immediately demanded a lawyer once she figured out what was going on. Yeah. Part of the fifth, right? You'd be like, I'm not talking until I get my lawyer. But she, I think, like you said, she kind of was like, I'm the big deal around here. Yeah. I'm going to fucking beat these dudes up. And, you know,
well,
interrogations are designed
wrong
for you to be beaten up. She miscalculated that scenario.
Quite a bit. Yeah. 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 I don't know. It's a very strange case, and it's sad that it took 30 years to solve it and finally get, you know, Sherry some justice for her murder. But hopefully her family can move on and kind of put it to rest after this. I mean, I don't really believe in closure necessarily, but I would say this has to help a little bit, that the right person finally got what she deserved.
Yeah. All right, pod people, thank you for joining us for the Stephanie Lazary case. We appreciate you and your listens.
Yes, yes. As always, if you'd like to get in contact with us, our email is throughtheabysspodcast@gmail.com. We're also on Instagram, Twitter, and Snapchat at abysspodcast1.
And Spotify. Pandora.
Well, Ben, we got another episode under our belts. Thanks so much for tuning in to Through the Abyss podcast. And until next time, keep it weird.
Spooky stuff.